God fucking beautiful world we live in, and I'm here in front of my fucking family. It's a beautiful life. Broken tail dog. You know what it is. If you're new, you're lucky. You're lucky you've started now, because the greatness is upon us. Josh Ricardo here. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. I'm wrapping up my LA trip, and I have in front of me, I saved the best for last, because I have in front of me a guy who not only I look up to as a professional, but he is family. So without any further ado, I have my man, Sanjay Amin. Say hello.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for that intro. It was very kind of you.
And we've heard a lot of intros this week, and yeah. I feel like I nailed that one. That's how you do a fucking intro, goddammit. So this is why I'm going to give some context to the audience on who you are in my life and why you're on the show. Mm-hmm. All right. First and foremost, Sanjay is one of the most brilliant individuals I've ever met. Columbia Business School. All that stuff, top of his class. He now works in the music division at YouTube, which we're going to talk about. He's very involved in digital and kind of on the cutting edge of where the future of how you get your entertainment and your news, for that matter, and pretty much everything in your life, how that is being shaped. This man is a part of that. So Sanjay helped produce Dating on Set. A lot of you guys are fans of the show. Thank you. This guy is responsible. All the stuff on the back end that you see, all the playlists, all the stuff he taught and showed and constructed and molded that show to where it is now, which is over 500,000 views and over 1,100 subscribers. So that is from fucking scratch with not even a viable morsel of the format that's due to go viral. We were still able to accomplish that, and we would not have been able to do that without you. So this is the man I have in front of me now.
Thanks, Josh. I appreciate that.
Yes. So I think your knowledge of not only of what's about to happen and what's happening, but where your background is and the trajectory of your career, I think is fascinating. And I think the listeners will enjoy hearing about that as well. So I thought we always talk and have these really great in-depth discussions, Sanjay and I. We sometimes sit around and we'll drink whiskey and just talk, two guys talking, no women, no nothing, just talking. And my wife loves that because she knows I'm problematic. I'm always I'm with a dude a lot who brings out the best in me, and we have these really in-depth combos about what kind of stuff you want to create, what you want to be a part of, and what that conversation is. And what better to do it than hear and talk about it publicly. You started in the music industry.
I did, yeah. So my first gig in music was in music publishing. I worked at a place called Songs Music Publishing back before it was less than 10 people, and we were signing...
Is it a huge company now?
It's 30-ish people now, and some of the names on the roster now are The Weeknd, Lorde,
Diplo. Oh, who they manage the publishing.
Yeah, so they work directly with those people as songwriters.
Okay, right? So when those people write a song, those clients... That's who they work with to make sure that all the P's and Q's, all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed about when they put their product out, to make sure they're getting paid properly.
Exactly.
Tell us a little bit about what publishing once was before the digital age.
Yeah.
And what you experienced. Because it's so vastly different, I don't think people understand.
Yeah, so I mean, this is kind of music industry 101, but there's kind of two major entities that like create music in the industry, or help support the artists that create music in the industry. There's the record label, which most people know, and then there's the music publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And the distinction there is that the label represents the artist, the person that did the recording on that particular day in the studio, and what they own is that like studio recording.
Okay.
And then the publisher represents sort of the underlying copyright to that song. And the songwriters. And sometimes the songwriters are one and the same as the artists, and sometimes they're different, right?
Okay.
So, you know, a lot of times in pop, you have 20 people writing a song.
Yeah. And what constitutes you being able to get your name on a song now? Like, what would I have to do? What's the smallest amount of things I'd have to do to get the credit? What is it?
So it's a bit of a more of an art than a science.
Okay.
Usually it's a bunch of people working together in a studio, cutting a track, and then when they're done,
they assess.
As an afterthought, it's like, well, who owns what of the song, right?
And your team has to figure that out, right?
Exactly. And fuck. So the publisher who's representing the songwriter, maybe they have like more of a say. You know, we put this person in the session. We think they should get 25% of the song because mm-hmm. they did whatever, the beats, and they did some of the arrangement work. A lot of times, like I said, it's an art more than science. So like the songwriter with the most experience might get most of the cut of the song.
Really?
And it's all percentage based, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. So if 20 guys are on a song, they're splitting that up 20 ways.
Potentially,
and,
yeah.
And exactly. Someone gets more than others.
Exactly. Okay. So I'll give you an example. So I'll take The Weeknd as an example, right?
Yeah.
His real name's Abel Tesfaye.
Okay.
And Abel's in the studio, and he's working with a couple producers, and the track's done.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll say, okay, well, that's I did the lyrics and everything. It's the 50% of that song is mine.
Mm-hmm.
And then whoever else is in the studio will
producing
out,
wise,
right?
Okay,
we'll figure out what percentage they own based on the work that they did, right?
And really?
So it's like that, kind that of a must handshake
get,
agreement.
Gets sticky when you it think does. About creating art, right? So you're thinking about creating; it's an art you're creating. So, like you said, it's not a science; it's an art. You know, you're creating this piece of art that's property now, and now you're doing it with your friends or people you may respect in the business, and now you have to have that conversation of money.
Right.
So I assume that those two guys, whoever the producer is in The Weeknd, aren't necessarily going at it about who gets what. They're probably letting their people go right. at it, right?
Exactly.
Does that carry over, though, for Bad Blood? It must. I mean, it's all you hear stories about guys that aren't getting their just due in a band or whatever. So I'm assuming it translates to this as well.
It does. And so there's a lot of disagreements that pop up around publishing splits and disagreements. And so the best practice is to go into studio knowing like what everyone's job is, but you can't define it too much because you never know what happens organically.
It's unorganic at that point, right? It's contrived.
Exactly. Like, I've got this idea. Like, what do you think? And then someone builds on it and someone adds something else. And like, who's to say what the tipping point was and who owns
yeah.
what, right? And so
yeah.
you hope that folks are friendly, that everyone's friends. And like I said, it does kind of shake out where the people that are more established have more clout in that negotiation, right?
It's like one of those things if you know, I'm a huge fan of documentaries, and I watched, you know, the one on the Eagles recently, and they were talking about how they learned how to write songs via Jackson Browne because mm-hmm. they lived in the same house as them or something, and they would hear him, or an apartment above them, they would hear him how he writes songs, and they would always gauge on how he was writing via his teapot, right?
Uh-huh.
So when he wrote Take It Easy, I think the boys, Glenn Frey, Don Henley, I think they wrote a lot of the song, or maybe it's the vice versa, whatever, it doesn't really matter. The point is, I think he threw in a part that was a game changer. It was a very small thing, but
right.
it was a game changer. And now these guys have to take something that's, you know, it's the old saying, that Jay-Z saying from, Fade to Black, where he's making that documentary. He goes, you know, I just cracked the door and let God in. I mean, that's essentially what that is.
Yeah.
It's a universe providing, which, you know, I like
right.
to say a lot. It's a moment of intervention, divine intervention, if you will.
Right.
And now you got to monetize it, and you got to figure out, like,
right.
if you're not cool with that guy, or there's some beef there, or there isn't, and now you got to give him fucking money, and you're kind of
right.
resentful because Jackson Browne had a really successful writing career at that point. Those guys were just coming on, but you still got to make that decision.
Exactly. So jealousy factors in. It's people dynamics too. At the end of the day, with
how did that firm specifically, if you remember anything, or just in, I mean,
yeah.
you can be in general about it, how would they, how do they operate when it comes to stuff like that?
Yeah.
What do you
yeah.
do? I mean, like you say, if they have a more of a say, if they know who they're putting in the studio
right.
with them, but if their artist is making a song, they're like, well, you know, my boy came in and said lemons, and I thought lemonade, and I made lemonade. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you,
right.
if whatever the artist wants, you got to try to get your client what he wants. If they're saying that this dude in the studio gets a credit, then all is good. But
right.
if there's this other dude who has no voice, who just happens to be
right.
a guy associated indirectly with the act, does something.
Right. So for our songwriters, we, you know, before putting them into a writing session or a recording session, we'd have a pretty good idea of like who was doing what, and based on that would already be negotiating with their people
mm-hmm.
as to what the splits are going to end up being.
So that's how you
right?
that's
so
how to kind
not
of
not songwriter to songwriter kind of having
sure.
to argue it out. It's like the people that represent
up
them
front it's
already.
Happening
exactly.
So that's it.
And if there happens to be that random guy in the studio that comes in and it's like, yeah, lemons or whatever, that
yeah,
one
yeah.
thing, and then maybe that ends up making the song
mm-hmm.
again, it's going to come down to, in that environment, when does that person have representation?
Like, yeah.
How sort of generous are people feeling? Right?
Sure.
Like, you know, after a few beers and a few joints, maybe
everyone's friends, but everyone sobers up, it's a different ballgame. You're coming to my pocket.
Exactly.
And that makes everything...
Especially for songs that they know are going to be hits, right? Because
you kind of know with the formula now what's going to be a hit to a certain degree.
To some degree. Especially based on who's involved, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know that, you know, if Max Martin's on the track, it's going to be a huge hit.
Yeah.
Because he's got the formula down.
Sure.
There.
If you have Drake on your track, you pretty much know it's going to get heard.
Exactly. Yeah. Because these people also have giant marketing machines behind them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the way of PR companies mm-hmm. and their label and other entities that they work with.
Yeah. I think that is when everything starts to get greaseball, right? You know, the industry's known for being, the parts of it are being greaseball. A lot of it is greaseball. There's not much good nature here and there. Yeah. There is. And I think we produce that as people. You can produce good nature in this industry if that's what you're going after, right? And I think you kind of stand for that in general. But when it comes down to stuff where you have to monetize art, it always becomes greaseball.
Yeah, there's always been this interesting interplay between art and commerce, right? And
yeah.
Like,
that's a very mild way of putting it. Interesting.
Money buys the art, but the art needs the money. And so it's like this weird symbiotic relationship that, you know.
It's like I'm reading The Prophet, and he talks about joy and pain and how they sleep in the same bed. When you're out partying with joy, don't forget that pain and sorrow is sleeping in the bed waiting to wake up too. I mean, and that's kind of what that scenario is. I mean, there is not one without the other. The thing that's making you happy, ultimately, the thing that makes you sad is going to come into play too.
But, you know, I will say, and maybe I'm biased because I'm a part of this, like, new media, new music.
Yeah, we're going to get into that, but this is a great way to open it up. Yeah, sorry, not to cut you off, but...
No, I think the industry has changed. Like, it sort of had this reputation for being a lot of skeezball.
This is music specifically.
Specifically, right? Like, you hear all these, like, great stories.
Suge Knight holding Vanilla Ice over the balcony and shit. Like, those are great stories.
These great stories, but, you know, they're not...
The mob getting their people played on the radio. And if they don't, they fucking bash DJs' heads in. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And, like, that happened, and to some degree happens still. Maybe it's a little more subtle, not as over the top, because we live in an age
where everything is kind of, everyone has a camera in their hand. Yeah.
Exactly. I'll say one thing the old boss of mine once said. He said, in the tech industry, people are smart, and in the music industry, people are clever.
That's a great analogy. What do you think that truly means? And that analogy, what does that mean to you?
Yeah.
Smart is
like what you think about in traditional businessman terms, and, you know, being able to be really good with facts and figures and numbers, and, you know, making an argument and dealing in a professional manner.
Yeah.
That type of personality doesn't necessarily do well working with an artist brain or artist mentality, right?
Yeah.
They're unable to influence the direction. So if an artist wants to do something, like, they're not able, like, someone who's smart isn't always able to influence.
Yeah.
Whereas in the music industry, so many people are clever, and they're able to talk to an artist and influence them in different directions and come up with really interesting, neat, creative ideas.
Yeah.
But when it comes time to, like, the homeworky type shit, where you have to... you know, make sure people are getting paid properly. And, like,
homework type shit.
Like, register copyrights. Like, people are getting paid their royalty checks on time and things like that. Like, historically, like, the people that were closest to music weren't good at that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course
and
not,
that's
right?
starting to shift. And I think the best executives.
So, what's clever in that analogy to you? What would that be?
Really good at talking to artists, really good at, like, sort of influencing, negotiating, right? Like,
and those skill sets are different than the previous ones we mentioned as far as what it means to you to be smart. Okay.
Exactly. But I think the best executives have to have both, right?
Yeah. In this day and age,
you
have to be able to speak artist and speak business.
Exactly. And you see that with some really, really great execs in the industry now, but there's still a lot of... you know, old dinosaurs in the industry without naming names.
Yeah, yeah.
Who don't really get what's happening right now and what's happening with these new platforms.
I feel I am in a position where you and I have this conversation, I think, every fucking time we're in person together. It's like one of our go-tos. It's where is it to – where you play the game and then you put in what you want to do. And our biggest goal when we were making Dating on Set was we're saying, hey, we understand that this is part of – like we're going to do something that's part of the game. But by being part of the game, we're going to do my best to give you the meat, right? Yeah. We're not just going to go, okay, this is – we're going to get you there and we're going to have to, you know, make some concessions to get you there. But when we get you there and we got you, we're going to give you the meat.
Right.
And I think a conversation we had even this morning together, we were talking about the formulas of the industry. It takes away the clever sometimes in the sense that once you have it down, like once your whole job is to figure out what's what, like we talked about how deep Amazon even goes to knowing exactly what you want, or how Target can know that you're pregnant by what you're buying before even you do. Right. I mean, the stuff where they take what science knows about human nature and then they take commerce and they smash them together and utilize that to rape what you're doing, to rape who you are.
Right.
You think you're an original being, that there's something about you that's special. And in reality, they fucking know I need almonds. Amazon, I'll be perusing the internet and Amazon knows that I need almonds or I need fucking baby wipes to wipe my ass with. Like, they know the deepest, darkest shit that I need. They'll even put up lube sometimes. Like, oh, you gotta get lube. And I'm not even on the fucking site. I'm on Safari. I'm not even on them. But they know where I'm going.
Right.
That is terrifying, one. But two, when you're bringing up the dinosaurs, when you have made, when you're an innovator, like, see, I love Bruce Springsteen, and you talk about a guy that creates music that is relevant to this day who is in his 60s.
Right.
Just because you are from another time does not mean you could – does not mean you shouldn't be in the mix. Like, you can still utilize that innovation and apply it. How do you think people who are missing the boat, who maybe started doing things before all of this has happened – because technology does move so fast.
Right.
It ages you very quickly. I mean
–
when you can say stuff like, oh, I remember when text messages cost 50 cents,
right.
I could say that.
Right.
That's only like 10, 11 years ago. That wasn't like,
right.
I mean, I'm only talking about 10 years ago, but it sounds like I'm talking about 100 fucking years ago.
Yeah.
How do you, like, in your mind and what you're seeing and being next to the business and being next to the content creator, I mean, we're sitting in the YouTube space right now where there's content creators sitting next to you where you're doing your job, so you're close enough in proximity to have some rub off. What do you think needs to be done if someone is kind of missing the boat on the reality of the digital age? How does someone accomplish that, in your opinion, if you even have an opinion on it? How do you accomplish bringing something that is true and like tried and true to you into a market that is so formula and algorithm based?
Right.
How do you do that?
So this question of like, how do you stand out in a world where everything is formula based and you've got sort of unlimited choice now, right?
Yes, like, yes, yes, yes.
Back in the day, there were three networks and very limited spots that you had. And so like everyone had this like shared cultural base.
Mm-hmm.
Now we don't have that. It's very
fragmented,
right? So, you know, it kind of sounds trite to start with, but I think, I mean, it does start with just being true to who you are and
making
things that you care about that you think people should know or, you know, something.
So the passion is still the foundation of what you should be doing.
Totally.
Because now I think people, because that formula exists, and I'm guilty of it myself, look at something and they don't, I didn't always see it as, what does this mean to me? Sometimes the first idea would be, could this go, could this become viral or whatever the fuck the thing was that day, could this be that?
Right.
And you're saying that first and foremost it should always still be, what are you passionate about? So now you're passionate about something and you're okay and you're in it,
right?
Next move.
So then once you're in it, I mean, the thing that's the challenge and the thing to figure out is who your audience is, because they exist, it's just finding them, right?
Yeah.
And so the way Amazon knows that you need almonds and baby wipes right now, like you want to find the people that want the stuff that you're doing, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you do that by being the best version of yourself and being authentic to your voice and true to who you are, because when that comes out, the people that would naturally connect with that will hopefully see it.
Yeah, and seek it, and once they find it and seek it out more. Yeah, okay.
Now, I won't say that part's easy because it's...
That's the actual artist part. But that's the artist part. That's the part that should be done regardless of the format you're doing it on. Exactly. And that's always first and foremost, right, is you still have to be your own voice.
Right.
So now you're getting into the formula part. So it's like, now you just... Okay, so now we're at the part where we've like figured out who we are, what we want to be pushing, and what the fuck we stand for, right?
Right.
We have it. We have our code of conduct. We're ready to roll.
Right.
Now we have to find people.
Now you got to find the people, and now to some degree, you could argue both ways, but you have to play the game on certain platforms, right? So it is true that YouTube does favor channels that post frequently, right? And there's like a video a day or a video a week, and you could argue one of the unfortunate things of that is that, you know, if you're pushing out a video a week,
it's not very good usually.
Yeah, you need to.
You're losing.
You need time for creative ideas to develop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think about some of the greatest films or television projects ever. Yeah. Like, people really sat on them for years,
agonized over them. Yeah,
agonized over details. And the new digital age, like, where there's so much noise coming in, to be able to even have a shot at being favored by algorithms or having people serendipitously find your stuff, you need to kind of play along with that game and optimize around that game.
What's one of the, so people at home, so they know, give me two or three examples of how to play that game. Small examples, like, what would you say?
So on YouTube, there's a pretty great resource, anyone who's interested in doing like a YouTube channel called the YouTube Creator Academy. And they talk about some of these strategies. But one of the biggest things that people, I think they're starting to get hip to it, but didn't fully appreciate, like, having a thumbnail where you have the title of the video like in the thumbnail, and
it's huge.
Interesting shot can like make or break.
No, that's one of the things that you stressed to us when we're producing the show, and we, you know, obviously we follow everything Sanjay says, and we did that, and I guarantee you that's a big reason why we do have the numbers we do have is because of that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really surprising to see sometimes people, you know, they make these beautiful, amazing videos and use kind of the whatever the algorithm says a standard screenshot from screen grab from the video should be, and then they like just title it my show episode one or something, and it's not in a place where someone could even find it easily, or it wouldn't come up as a recommended video that someone would naturally think to click on.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what you're dealing with. You're trying to stand out among endless choice.
Endless,
like
yeah.
And even on other platforms now, right? And like,
so hashtags now, hashtags in YouTube world are the buzzwords, like those keywords that we come up with to put in the videos when we were working together. That's a big thing too, and I'm finding that it's even bigger on like Instagram and all that stuff, or even, I don't know how Facebook operates it, but Instagram, I noticed a lot more people, if I hashtag stuff, they'll come and like something.
Right.
Is that something that equates as well to YouTube? Like, our buzzwords are important,
or
keywords, rather?
It's important, but it doesn't have as much weight
as an Instagram would, right?
As an Instagram, yeah.
Because you can search by those.
Right.
You know, you could follow trends and...
Right. And the most important thing on YouTube is the video title and the thumbnail.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are, like, if that's all you're going to do, like, that's... like the most important stuff to make.
So we have our voice. We have our product. Yeah. We know what we want. Yeah. We have the war we want to fight.
Right. And you know how to play the game a little bit.
Now we know the formula as far as we know to put a decent thumbnail now. We know all this stuff. And after that, what the fuck do you do now? So you basically hope for a miracle and keep updating? So what's the answer? Like, to basically... are we saying that if you are good, you will be found? And I would love to believe that.
Right.
Because they used to say the same thing in sports. Like the NFL, they'll find you. If you're going through the channels they provide, which is quite a bit, and the scouting they have, if you're a player, you'll play. And I believe that because their product depends on finding you. So as long as you're not a fucking idiot, and you have some idea of where to go look for an opportunity there, they will take a quick glance at you. I don't know how that works in entertainment now, because I'm in a position, which you're really familiar with because I bitch to you all the time. Well, I call it talking and debating. But where for people to find you, you're creating content, right? So I'm creating content.
Right.
But then I'm losing jobs to people that already have a huge following, even though the work they're putting out doesn't necessarily equate to the thought and the development that I've put into my work. They just happen to have something strike or whatever, which is fine.
Right.
But when it comes to being found and having a place to go to bat, an opportunity, I'm finding that unless you have that, opportunity becomes very minimal.
Right.
How do you, in this day and age, and in this market, in this climate, in this entertainment era we're in right now,
yeah,
how, when there is endless noise, how does YouTube or Facebook or any other place that offers original format, I mean, you guys are the biggest, YouTube's fucking colossal,
mm-hmm.
how do you find people? Is it literally only the people that get, you know, if someone gets a lot of follows and a lot of subscriptions,
yeah.
That's who you pick, right? So you're literally letting yeah. whatever society
yeah.
is telling you depict what the product
is. It's very data-driven, right?
Okay.
We look at what's trending based on numbers purely. And it's simultaneously the most interesting and also maybe unfortunate things about the world today.
Because yeah.
people that fund content especially are a lot more risk averse now,
mm-hmm.
and they want to know an expectation of how much money they can make back
on the return
on their investment.
Have you seen the documentary "The Kid Stays in the Picture"?
I have not.
It's about Bob Evans, Robert Evans, who was the head of Paramount in their heyday. He's the one who greenlit Godfather. He's the one who greenlit Love Story. There's tons of movies that he picked,
mm-hmm.
and he solely was responsible of reading material. And going, this should be this, and picking the movies based on gut, based on is it good? I don't necessarily think that that's completely the way to go. I believe there is something to be said for understanding the data. But now it gets to a point where we're approaching driverless cars.
Yeah.
We're approaching machines that can write a Hallmark script without a writer, without a screenwriter. We're becoming very predictable as a nation.
Right.
And I don't think people are recognizing truly how predictable we're becoming, where they can literally punch some numbers into the machine
right.
and get exactly what you like. And that's fucking crazy to me, because I don't think that necessarily tells the full story of what we should be putting out as artists, right?
Of course.
So what you're saying is that you're in this situation where your company dictates what they're going to back because
right.
they want to know ultimately what the name of the game is.
Right.
Money.
Right.
Okay.
And again, art and commerce being mixed, right? And
yeah.
So that way of approaching investment in art, while it may make you money, may not beget the best art.
Yeah. And the more and more we do that, the more and more we rely and companies take over. I mean, YouTube and Google are colossal. I mean, I'm going to reiterate the word, because you really should read up on how much you guys actually touch. If you're out there listening, do some research on Google and YouTube. They're touching everything. You can't go very far in the world and not run into something that you guys are actually either
yeah.
funding, producing, or a part of. When you have that great of a responsibility as a company to put great stuff out, and you have to kind of carry that, right? Like
right.
whatever happens in society, you kind of have to take some responsibility for it in a way. That's a tough position to be in. And I've talked to other people that work for YouTube. You know, this isn't coming from Sanjay. I'm just actually others I've talked to where I say to them, like, so your stance is basically we're stepping away, and people can just upload shit. So it's on them what they upload. And whatever trends, and we'll follow that. And that's that. And that's how we wipe our hands of this. It's not good.
Yeah.
Well, it is, because you guys said it was good. You know, I mean,
yeah,
we're not tastemakers. We're not tastemakers.
Right.
We're just going off numbers.
It's a debate we could have for a long time.
Of course.
Because, at different points, I've always felt maybe we have this opportunity and maybe responsibility to have an editorial voice, right? And say, this is what we think is intelligent, that's mm-hmm. like interesting, original, that you need to see. The problem with a platform as large as ours, where we've got well over a billion people on the platform every month, all over the world, is when one entity, where most people live in California that live yeah. with this company, right? yeah. and sort of are American and are privileged in the sense that, you know, they've got great jobs and they've got good lives. If that type of person is dictating what everyone should be watching, it becomes a bit of a slippery slope.
It really right? does. You can't, that's a great
you can't
point.
Speak for everybody.
You can only talk about what you relate to. And I think the part that we're ignoring, personally, what I feel, is that part where all of a sudden the stories being told are the stories of the people that are in charge of telling the stories, which aren't always the stories you want to hear. It just right. they just aren't.
Right.
And I don't know how you remedy that now. I don't want to be a nostalgic, you know, I don't want to have a nostalgia fetish right now, but there is some reality to when film used to be really great. Mm-hmm. Now it's, like you said, it really is that formula of what am I going to get on my return when you're making that yeah. kind of content. And the risk level is so low now with them. They don't want anything
right.
really new. They're, right. they're regurgitating projects.
Right.
So the more and more we kind of go to that side of the fence where we're going to be really great at business and be really great at the bottom line and make money for our investors, you're not really...
Yeah. I mean, you're painting...
Some people will find a way to get the product out, right. the good content out. I'm not right. saying that, but...
All right. As much as there's this, like, bleak picture being painted, like, on the flip side of the story is... it's sort of an unprecedented time in human history where mm-hmm. anyone can make anything and put it up on the internet and like has that and has the potential for a billion people.
Sure.
See it.
A potential. Yeah.
A potential.
Even if it's, if it's completely improbable,
right.
it can happen.
Right. And the production tools are way more accessible.
Yes.
Everyone's got a camera in their
pocket.
It
is great. Yeah.
Right?
It is great.
And you hear about that Sundance film that was filmed on an iPhone. I'm not saying like everyone has the skills to do that, but
it's a possibility.
It's a possibility.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
And so
it's super exciting and super terrifying. I mean, I've come around to that. I originally hated all of it because I felt like it went against a lot of the stuff that I pride and I pride myself in and I love. But now I find it to be like exactly what you're saying. It's so exciting
yeah.
and also very terrifying
right.
that the accessibility
right.
is almost it's a disguise in a way because deep down all that. All those options you have eventually will be your algorithm and they'll know like what you want.
Right.
Which fuck, that's fucking terrifying for me as an artist. It's terrifying that if I don't relate to a product or a trend. And honestly, I'm not trying to definitely get political. I'm going to end it at this, but I also think PC America and understanding trends and the way news moves, and right-wing America, I think that's the position we're in now, maybe why the election was lost is because people are,
right.
this is my way, and that's that. Right. There's no discussion.
And culture's fragmented.
Yes.
We don't have a common cultural
yes.
base.
Yes, anymore. There is no thread.
Right.
You know, there used to be a thread, and then that conversation right. would bubble around the
Everyone
thread.
Everyone was talking about the same stuff. Now yeah. we're talking about different things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we're in our chambers.
But your little group is talking about the same thing.
Exactly.
No one's coming up with any different ideas. Everyone's just regurgitating and spitting out whatever that news is that they want to latch onto that helps them justify whatever their political position is, and that's what they're doing. So you become, like, very predictable, not to keep bringing up the word again, but that right. is the phrase of the day, is predictability, which is problematic in art.
Right.
And I think great art and the revolution of art will come in again, like it always does, because something unpredictable will happen. The right. problem is that now with this day and age, people want to monetize it immediately and make it unorganic. You know, like right off the bat, if they see something that's trending, like you said, right. they're going to fucking know before you know. You're going to know about something before anyone else knows because you got the data, you being YouTube. You have the data. So right. if something's popping, you're going to go, hey, guess what?
Yeah.
This is the business we're in right now, you know?
All right.
So how do you operate on a level where you can keep your integrity and also do good business. Because I think as an artist, the money part for me, like now I think about that, I'm 35. But it, from the giddy up, from day one, it's been visibility.
Right.
So if you can tell me visibility.
You were like, and that's what we're focused on now. Mm-hmm. To answer your question, like knowing that we can't necessarily take a hard editorial stand and say, you know, this is like the stuff we're going to promote and this mm-hmm. is what we think.
Because it doesn't really fit in your business model to take a stand
exactly.
anywhere.
Because we are a platform for all people. And
yeah.
So we want to make sure that anything has a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And our duty, so there's, I think, our duty and then there's the artist's duty today. And I think our duty is making sure that the right art gets shown to the people that want to see that art.
Yeah.
And that we challenge people as well with our algorithms. So we don't just keep feeding them. And I'll give you a music example.
Okay.
If you know,
this
if
is great. Yeah.
If you listen on Pandora or if you just type in YouTube music.
Yeah. You guys own video. Pandora?
We don't.
Okay.
No.
All right.
Or
just gonna shit on it. I'm glad now you don't own it.
Or if you type in a song and you let YouTube keep playing you more music. We want to give you stuff that's in the same vein because you're obviously trying to have a listening experience mm-hmm. based on whatever Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
But we're going to throw in some other stuff that will that is not too much of a departure where it's like you're going from the West Coast to the East Coast all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But is enough where you can be challenged and you can learn something
mm-hmm.
and maybe learn about an artist you didn't know about before. Hopefully an artist that is like an indie artist.
So you're saying through the algorithm, you take what you got, the information, and you're not just hand feeding them what they're saying they like. You're going, hey, this might be a slight stretch or a little bit off the beaten path, but we think that this could fit you.
Exactly.
And that challenges the person.
Exactly.
And you guys have the capability of doing that
exactly.
whenever someone's operating your product.
Exactly. We actually give them user choice within our YouTube Music app. You have the choice to have a playlist generated for you that's like completely balanced, stretched, or like super narrow.
That is
exactly
incredible.
All I want to do is listen to Bruce songs.
That's amazing yeah. that you do that because you're right. That's taking your influence and making people go outside the box, but giving them the opportunity to
giving
either
them
choose
the option,
that
the choice.
Yeah, to go, hey, we have some people we think you'll like. There won't be them, but some people that I think fit in your right. wheelhouse there, or we can just go with the fucking
right.
standard that you want right now. I love that.
You put
that's
on people,
brilliant.
Are you open to that?
Yeah,
right.
I love that. Right. So with music, and that's your forte, and that's what you do here at YouTube, is you head up the music division here in LA, right? Like you kind of understand and make those deals and figure out how to incorporate certain artists and certain people in events. I mean, you do all that shit. It's business, right? Fucking business.
A lot of business.
Do you feel like music, it's easier to do music like that because it's a 3-minute, 4-minute song as opposed to film, sketch, other YouTube users?
Yeah.
Like, it would be really great if, say, someone does a similar thing that I do, but they have a huge following.
Right.
But they do have suggested videos, right?
Right, they do.
Mm-hmm.
We the
how do I get in the suggested video?
The difference is the data around music is a lot more robust nowadays, partially because it's a shorter form format, but also because it was like the first industry that got disrupted by the digital age.
Yeah.
And so it has a bit of a head start in that regard. And so there's a lot of people that have been just doing a lot of work, hardcore data work around music,
mm-hmm.
like trying to figure out all the attributes of why you like a song, right? That type of work is starting to be done for video as well, and in companies like Netflix,
yeah,
you know, trying to give you good recommendations based on what you watched already, and companies like us that are also giving you suggested videos. A lot more work needs to be done in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think music is getting really good.
Yeah.
As far as, auto-generating playlists based on just a single indicator that you
yeah.
typed in.
No, it is pretty staggering, but I was going to bitch about Pandora because and you put in who you like, and they never really play that person. They kind of may throw them in once, you know, but for the most part, they're not doing you any favors, and they're going off. They're going way off. I mean, their algorithms are doing as essentially their job, but it's not like a, oh wow, they really nailed it for me. I mean, it's not like what you're saying. It's not a fine science just yet for them. So that was my complaint. And you're saying with film that or with video rather, that is becoming more and more of a possibility to have a more concentrated effect on it that is actually efficient.
Exactly.
Like the music. Yeah. That can happen. That's going to happen. That's happening as we speak.
It's happening. Yeah.
But how do you select the suggested videos? How do you even find that?
It's somewhat based on, actually largely based on what the user tells us, essentially, which is based on what they watch already.
Okay.
So we know what you've watched, and based on what you've watched,
does it pick a selection or randomness of it? Like someone who maybe has, like us, 1,000 subscribers compared to someone who has 100,000?
I mean,
it kind
of
does a whole array.
Yeah. It does, because ultimately it just wants to show you the stuff that is closest to what you want to watch in that moment. And there's so many data points, right? So many data points that factor into that.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll ever be done cracking that code, but
that
will get better and better and better. And you've seen that in Google products across the board, right?
Like
how much more refined and efficient. And
I mean, your voice function alone on the app, the Google app, is to me far better than Siri. Mm-hmm. It just is. So final question. When do the machines take over?
Next week.
Do you fucking know? Yeah. You fucking Google fuck? Do you know, you motherfucker? What's great about Sanjay is he doesn't really participate in social media at all. That's not really your MO.
I don't.
It's so funny because we've gone to dinners and stuff and hung out with other people in the business. And a lot of guys that I meet that are on Sanjay's level, Sanjay is pretty humble about his station in life. When, you know, he would have a lot to brag about if that was his chosen path. And we're around people that they want to show that shit off. They have the fucking, especially when they have the insight, because this guy Sanjay, he touches all kinds of different markets of digital.
Yeah.
Instagram, Tinder. I mean, he knows people that are working in every little corner of the digital world. So essentially your social media could be fucking robust and buff because you'll know all the tricks and how to post and like, hey, get me verified. Can you do that? I mean, he has those connections and he chooses to not. And this is why him and I are fucking brothers. That being said, I mean, this is the end of the show. I usually say, yeah, okay, plug what you're doing. And you just came in and just schooled us and you're going to fucking disappear into the night. It's a thing of beauty. You can't find the motherfucker.
You can't find me. I'm off the grid.
He's off the grid, but not really.
I don't even have a social security number. No,
he's literally creating the algorithms in your life right now, but he is off the fucking grid, so he knows something.